Blog Talk Radio.
Take a Run Productions.
And welcome to the URN Radio Show. I'm the Mouth from the South, the Paranormal Outlaw, and joining me as always is Martin Bravo and Jeffrey the Idiot Sterling.
Now, smartest guy you know. But then again,
oh man. So how's y'all's week been?
Kev, he's Texas, so he doesn't know too many smart people as it is.
Well, I didn't do too much. I went and bought Man of Steel and The Conjuring and watched that this weekend.
Oh, how is Man of Steel?
I liked it. Very good movie.
I got it on Blu-ray.
Okay, so it's worth the buy?
Oh, yeah.
I went to see it in 3D at the IMAX.
Oh, awesome.
It was amazing.
Oh, man. I've had The Conjuring. I actually had bought The Conjuring the day that it came out. There's a lot of haters for that movie. I actually like that movie. I think because I didn't go in taking it as, like, an investigative tool for a movie, you know? Like, I wasn't trying to watch The Conjuring because that's the way paranormal should be investigated. I watched it for what it was, which is, you know, pure entertainment.
It scares me.
If you watch the director's deal where they talk about the making of it on the DVD, the movie is based on a true story, but the director also talked about that since the Warrens have done like 12,000 cases, that he took bits and pieces from a lot of their cases.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And actually, the director was pretty cool, man. Like, the way he was explaining how, you know, he said there were certain scenes where he had to get, like, that shock and awe to keep that movie interesting and how he went about it, you know. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. But, yeah, for entertainment purposes, it was a good movie.
I love that movie, man. You know, and it's funny, I like their take on Annabelle the doll. I know a lot of people were, like, a little butthurt about that, but I don't know. I think it looks way cooler now, you know, like, I don't know. And then when she bangs on the doors, oh, man, that freaks me out.
Oh, yeah, man.
They did a good job with that sound, you know?
Yeah, you know, you don't think of stuff like they hung bells on the doors that kept opening, so when you heard the bell going off. And I never, you know, that's just a simple way of being able to document stuff, you know? And I was like, dang.
Yeah, it was pretty cool, man. And then I liked when she was playing that stupid, was it the clap and seek game or whatever? And she heard it late at night and then she ended up in the basement and those hands came out of the darkness. Oh, man, that was freaking creepy.
Well, that would be about as creepy as going into a dark basement and lighting a match and seeing Jeff's face.
Well, that's a thing of beauty.
That's a thing of beauty.
Oh, man. But, yeah, that's pretty much it, man. I was pretty lazy this weekend. I did, since it was so pretty today and the Cowboys weren't playing, I hopped in my truck and just drove around for a little while, and I went on a back country road, and this one road highway had three cemeteries on it. And when you turn down the road where it says cemetery, you go way back in the woods, and these cemeteries are out in the woods, no houses around. And I was like, man, I got to come back and investigate these.
Nice. That'd be
cool.
I did.
Yeah, I found some cool new places to check out. So that's pretty much all I did this weekend.
You know, sometimes that's what it takes, man, just to jump in a truck and drive for hours, you know?
Yeah. So, and of course, I always look forward to Mondays because my show Sleepy Hollow's on, and I'm addicted to that like crack.
Yeah, I need to actually buy TV again. Stop being so cheap. I know it's been so nice to not have TV because it kind of forces me and Stacy to do things that we wouldn't normally do if we were just, you know, couch potatoes. But I do miss watching TV shows.
Oh yeah. Jeff, what did you do? Really? That sounded like it. No, that sounded like an interesting weekend.
Jeff fell asleep already.
He's taking a dump. But anyway, back to the paranormal. If you haven't liked one of the pages that we have out there, there's the URN Radio Network page on Facebook, and there's also the URN Radio Show page on Facebook. Also, Tara Pott, the show I do on Tuesdays, has a Facebook page. Go on there and like that. We post who our guests are each week. And I believe our URN Radio Network page is up to about 461 likes. So we're getting up there.
Oh, nice, nice. It's always good to have a couple extra likes.
Yeah.
You know,
our show we did last week, since we didn't have a guest and we just went on a tangent about the paranormal.
Oh, yeah.
We actually had 16 live listeners. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to tune in to hear what I got to say.
I was actually feeling semi-bad for that show because we all kind of just let it all out. You know, like, you know how, like, you've always wanted to say something. You're like, you know, I'm just going to say it tonight. But, I don't know, I feel much better, though, voicing my opinion on how I think the paranormal has been changing the last couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we'll have the conversation we had prior to going on air. We'll have to have one of those conversations one night when we don't have a guest. Well, we'll get Jeff all stirred up when you talk about politics. But tonight we have, and I hope I say his last name correctly. If not, he can correct me when he gets on air. He's an author and paranormal investigator. His name is Chad Stambaugh, and he'll be on the show tonight. So he'll be calling in from the Pacific Coast. So it's only a little after 6 o'clock there. So must be nice.
You know, I have to admit, I'm actually, I was a little upset because last night was like the best night to go see the Comet, and I walk outside, and I woke up at like 4:45 in the morning, and I go to see the Comet, and it was like all clouds. I was like,
wait, there's a comet?
Yeah, Comet Ison. It's supposed to be like the comet of the century, apparently. Like, right now, it's like you have till, I want to say, November 28th to see it before it hits perihelion, which goes around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it doesn't tear apart, then it's going to be, like, way brighter. But, yeah, it brightened up this last week to be able to see with the naked eye.
Cool.
Yeah, but yeah, I woke up all super early. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to see the comet. And then I go outside and it's like the most overcast it's ever been.
Damn. And, of course, this, what's today's date? Today is the
17th.
So, the 22nd will be
Friday.
What day will that be? Friday?
Yeah.
Yeah, Friday will be the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination.
Which was also...
Oh, yes. Speaking of, my friend Clay, the other member on my team, he got passes to actually go to the whole ceremony thing, like, and he was telling me that they had to do, like, background checks, and they did, like, they had to go through this whole process to get a seat, and, you basically had to have not shown up on any radar for the longest time, you know, and then, so he's actually going to be a part of that, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I told him to take pictures. I was like, man, you got to send pics.
Right?
And the assassination also happened on Friday.
But, yeah, but, you know, the whole conspiracy about that is just, it's an ongoing. I watched a deal on CNN. They have a brand new thing about it that Tom Hanks was involved in. And the conspiracy theories really started kicking, you know, just a couple months after the whole event happened.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was already conspiracy theories then. Some of the theorists were coming on the Ed Sullivan show and whatnot, and it was getting really heated back in the 60s.
What they didn't expect was Abraham Zapruder.
The Zapruder film.
They didn't expect anybody to be able to get that good of a shot of it. And, I mean, you could sit there, you could say that Oswald fired this or fired that. The fact is that when the fatal headshot hit Kennedy, that shot came from the front and to the right.
Yep.
Because the head goes back and to the left. Had he been shot from behind, he would have went forward. But he did
this
not.
This is true.
That right there tells me that, I mean, Oswald may have fired a shot, but he didn't fire that shot.
Well, and that's another thing, too. People think that Oswald was not even involved because of the librarian. Her, the time that she said she saw Oswald is not the time that the FBI marked as the time that she saw him. FBI marked down the time that she saw him as to coincide with when everything was going down.
See, I've studied this case, fairly detailed for someone that wasn't involved in it. I think Oswald, but I don't think he fired any shots. Nitrate test that they ran on him said he didn't fire. He didn't even fire a single weapon.
Yeah, exactly.
And the only reason that the police called to the Texas Theater is because he didn't pay the 75-cent movie ticket. That's the only reason they called the police. And when they did that, 30 cops showed up. Are you kidding me?
that's normal for Texas, though. It's funny, like, you know, you get pulled over, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, like a whole attack team comes out. I was like, what are y'all afraid of, man? Like, really? you really need a attack team to come out for a speeding
There's a great documentary that the History Channel did on the 25th anniversary of the assassination. It's called The Men Who Killed Kennedy. And it's about a 9-part documentary. And it tells every little detail.
You know what's really cool, though, is that...
After the hospital.
The it's cool to see, like, how much the change in electronics has happened, like, technology, you know. Because if that was today, and Kennedy was shot here in a couple of days, I mean, you know how many people would have iPad video, video from their phones?
Yeah.
It would be impossible to fake something like that. I mean, I know it is possible, but just the amount of people that would have video as opposed to back then, you know?
And there's actually about, if I'm not mistaken, there's about 5 different videos of the assassination, but only one with the view that Zapruder had.
Nice.
All the others were from, you know, from on Houston Street. And they just turned and got, you know, they got it in the distance.
Yeah. And even speaking like of media coverage, I mean, media coverage is completely changed since then. You know, like back then they had like one or two media outlets, but now we have so many that somebody would have had to have been in the right spot at the right time, you know?
It's everybody now.
Yep.
Jeff, I believe we have our guest on hold.
Oh, you believe? All right, let's see. Hello.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, how's it going, man?
I'm doing great. I'm out here in sunny California that you guys were just talking about.
Yeah. The sun's still up for you?
Actually, the sun just went down probably 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, we're in the all never knowing day-to-day weather of Texas.
Okay, where in Texas?
Martin's in Dallas. I'm in East Texas, and Jeff, he's close to Austin in Waco.
Okay.
So yeah,
got some fellow paranormal people in that area.
Cool. Yeah, we know a lot of folks here in Texas.
Central Texas is
man.
The best part of Texas, other than Houston.
You guys know Bill Vail?
Sounds familiar.
He just was featured on last week's Paranormal Witness, and he's also the founder of an organization I belong to, United Paranormal International.
Yeah, I know the group. Sweet.
Well, Chad, for our listeners out there, give a little background on how you got into the field and whatnot.
Oh, wow. We've been doing it for about 6 years now, and actually got into it kind of on just as a lark, as you could say. My wife was interested in it more than I was, so I just went to a meetup with her one night to support her. And we went to a couple other meetings, and I didn't think anything of it. And then for probably about 6 months, we joined up with a local team here, and we started going to investigations. But it wasn't until one night at my home, which is my wife's home, she bought it when her grandmother passed away in the house. And I was feeding my six-month-old grandson in his high chair, and he kept looking over my left shoulder while I was feeding him, and he was acting like he was talking to somebody or waving to somebody behind me. Well, there was nobody in the house but me and my grandson. So I knew that my grandmother supposedly had died in the house, and my wife said that, you know, she had paranormal activity in the house. I hadn't seen anything at this point in time. I'd only been in the house for about 3 months at the time. So I just nonchalantly, you know, said that, you know, Grandma, if you're here, can you make the recliner that's behind us? I was sitting on the couch. Could you make the recliner move to let me know you're here? Well, this recliner is one of those old-fashioned antique kind of recliners where it's not going to move unless somebody's just sitting in it and use your legs, you know, to push it, turn it. Well, as soon as I said that, though, that thing turned 45-degree angle towards me.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
Yeah, so I thought, you know, okay, maybe I'm just seeing things or, you know, whatever. So I said, okay, Grandma, make sure I'm seeing this. If that was you, could you put it back to the original position? As soon as I said that, chair went back to the original position. I was hooked and been doing it ever since.
Wow. See, that's the kind of paranormal story I like to hear, like how you got into it. Because mine was like, mine is not like not that great at all. I was just, you know, I spent years reading up on it. You know, I was a 12-year-old kid that read UFO books and stuff like that. And then finally one day I was like, oh, maybe I should just start researching. And then that's how I got into it. My story is like really boring, you know. I wish I could say that I saw a ghost and you know, a shadow person is what got me into it, but really it was just, you know, research and reading so much on it. That and actually back in the day, Coast to Coast, when Art Bell was on it, I think that's what really pushed me into paranormal.
Okay. Yeah, that was what got me started, and like I said, I've been doing it ever since now, and now I do lectures, I do paranormal 101 classes, just getting ready to have my second book come out.
Oh, nice.
Come on.
Yeah. And it's also, it's good to do those paranormal 101 classes because of the way our field has grown in popularity. There's always people that, oh, you know, they're watching TV and watch these shows, and then all of a sudden they decide they want to become investigators, start a team, and then you got a bunch of, you know, there's a lot of teams that are out there that are very inexperienced, and I always try to tell them don't undertake private home cases for a while until you read up and talked to paranormal teams that have been in it for a while, because you could tell a client the wrong thing if you don't know what you're doing.
Exactly. Yeah, we didn't even start doing private home investigations until probably maybe 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. Up until then, we were doing nothing but, you know, historical sites and places that were suspected haunted, but, you know, they weren't private homes or anything like that. But, yeah, once you get into it, that's one of the things that we love to do out here. My team, 11th Hour Paranormal, we stress education wholeheartedly because, like you said, with the popularity of all these shows on TV, it becomes a two-edged sword where you're getting all these new people that are interested in it and wanting getting into it, but they're not getting the education or the basics of what they're doing properly. So when they get out there, they're getting themselves in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and ultimately it falls back on all of us that are in the field because it, as a whole, it tarnishes all of us, you know. Because when I had my team going, there was numerous times where we were the second team that a client called because the first team went in, investigated, stirred some stuff up, and just left the client hanging and didn't even help them.
Yep, that's pretty much where we're at now, the last year and a half. Not so much that we would have to go in and clean somebody else's mess up. I mean, we do that a lot. But primarily what we do now is we've been trained how to do cleansings and blessings of houses. So usually we'll have there's like two or three other paranormal groups in our area, and usually what happens is they go in and get the investigation done, and if they actually get something and the client says, you know, well, you know, I want it gone, well, they don't know how to do that, so then they call us in on a referral, and we go in and take care of it for them.
That's good, because I've even heard of I talked to a client one time, the team that had gone in prior, of course, this wasn't one of our cases, but I talked to this person at a convention, and she said that the team that came into her home tried to do a cleansing, but she told me, I said, so did it work? She goes, no. And I said, well, what did they do? And she said they did a bunch of prayers, and then they sprinkled salt around the perimeter of the home. And I said, they didn't sage or, you know, burn white candles or, you know, anything to try to burn them out, you know, drive the spirits outside. And she said, no. And I said, you know, salt the ceiling technique. You salt after you've cleansed, you know, to kind of protect the home. So basically, all they did was seal the spirits in the house.
Exactly. They just trapped it, what they were trying to get rid of.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why we're saying, you know, we really, really push education out here. And I try to go different conventions also, and, you know, every once in a while, if I'm, you know, promoting my books or whatever, I go to, you know, East Coast or the West Coast, and that's what the biggest thing is I push is the education. Never stop educating. I mean, it's just like if you're a lawyer or a doctor or, you know, something like that, just because you've got your medical degree or your law degree now doesn't mean that you don't keep practicing and studying, you know, up on the law, see if anything new is coming out. Paranormal is the same way. You may not be getting paid for it, but you need to know what you're doing and keep getting the education, because things are changing in this field so fast, constantly, that you have to stay up on top of what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Now, you mentioned books. What's the books that you've written?
Okay, well, the first book that I wrote has been out since last January. It's on Amazon.com. It is actually called Paranormal Investigations. And what it does is it actually breaks down all the equipment in layman's terms. I mean, there's other books out there like it, but either they're poorly written, you can't understand what the author's talking about, or they get so scientific that unless you've got a master's degree in science, you're not going to understand what they're talking about. So I kind of went and broke it down in the layman's terms so that anybody that can read, eighth grade level, can understand how to, you know, use the equipment and use it properly.
Nice. Jeff, that means you can read the book.
I read more books than you ever have.
And then the second part of the book, it also breaks it down on actually how to do an investigation in like a historic site setting, and then also how to do a private investigation properly. And it actually has some forms and stuff in there to show people, you know, how to actually do it.
Yeah, see, that's good. That's good material for teams that are starting out. And
exactly.
Because what they don't realize, and I've come across this so much going on investigations at a conference and working with other teams, is some of them, you know, they'll have the K2 meter, and they don't realize that it can give you a lot of false readings, and you got to test them. You know their K2 goes off, and they're like, "Whoa, we got something here!" And I walk over with mine, and I start tracing around the wall, seeing if there's any wiring that's giving off any kind of EMF or whatnot, and I always debunk it. And they're like,
I said,
"You got to debunk it. Every time something goes off, you got to debunk it first." I said, "If it's a spirit, give it command. Say back. If it's lighting up, back away from it and stop it from going off. And then if it stops, then ask it to come and step up close to it again and see if it goes off again." And you do that a couple times to kind of understand if you're getting an intelligent response or it's just picking up a false reading.
Right, you're validating what you're trying to get done.
Yeah, and a lot of them, they were just jumping to conclusions and going, "Well, we got something." I'm like, "No, dude, that's wiring in the wall."
Yeah, the biggest thing that I see when I go to conventions and I talk about it, especially when I was promoting my first book, Paranormal Investigations, you know, I get people that, you know, wearing the T-shirts, and they'll come up and look about, "Oh, well, I already know how to investigate. I don't need this book." And they'll go to walk away or whatever, and I'll ask them, I said, "Well, what do you do when you start an investigation? You do baseline readings." And they just look at me like, "What the heck's a baseline reading?" I'm like, "And you know what you're doing? No, you need this book."
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, it's if you're using a temperature, you know, simple piece of equipment, something that's measuring the temperature. If you don't know the average temperature in a location, or whether it's drafts, you know, especially if it's depending on how old the building is, you know, you can get false readings just on the temperature reads.
Exactly, and also like with your appliances, if you don't know, if you're using an ohmmeter, and you're getting milligauss readings, if you don't know what the normal milligauss readings coming from a certain appliance is, then how are you going to know if you actually, when you go back there and you start doing your investigation, whether, you know, you've got any paranormal activity going or not, because you don't know what the baseline milligauss reading was in that room with all those appliances.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then they go and they spend hundreds of dollars on some of the more popular pieces of equipment out there, and they don't even know how to operate those. Martin
exactly.
and I have
You're
a lot
spend
of discussion
that much money.
When it comes to equipment.
Yep.
Yeah.
You spend that much money, you need to know how to use it properly. Otherwise,
exactly.
you just wasted hundreds of dollars for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Now, my
second
book that's just getting ready to come out is it's called The Paranormal Dictionary, and that's exactly what it is. It's a dictionary with over 2,500 words and definitions that we use in the paranormal field and also in crypto, ufology, and demonology.
Oh, cool.
I bet in that dictionary it doesn't have the term that we use, or Jeff uses a lot, take a run.
Take a run? No,
yeah.
I'm sure. I know it doesn't have that.
Yeah, that's what we refer to when if we say a ghost is going to take a run at your ass.
Okay. Definitely don't have that one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a joke that we've had for many years. Come from Jeff, and we use it. We kind of like it, the fact, you know, you always have that one person in the group that you always encourage the ghost to mess with, play jokes on.
Oh, yeah.
They know better to mess with me. It ain't nothing
to
me. Oh,
man. So what are some of the locations, the historical locations you've been at since you're over there on the Pacific Coast? Have you had an opportunity to go to Linda Vista or any of the other well-known places on that side?
We haven't done Linda Vista, but we've done places like Point Sur Lighthouse,
mm-hmm.
which is down in the Santa Barbara area. Mm-hmm. We've done the Winchester Mystery House up in San Jose, a couple local areas we've done in the area where we live, a place called the Zaud House, Zaud. It's actually pronounced Zaud because they're like German. But we've done that one. Another place we've done is called Fresno Flats. It's up in the mountain area where we hear in Fresno, because we're in Fresno area, so we're like right on the base of the mountains.
Wow. How was the Winchester House?
We got a few things, but to me, I think it was more residual than anything intelligent. I really didn't get any intelligent
mm-hmm.
evidence. Mostly it was, like I said, all residual.
What was one of the more active places you've been to?
The more active places? Oh, let me see. Well, it wouldn't be an historic site. Most active place we went to was up in Stockton, California, which is north of us.
Mm-hmm.
This was a few years ago. And it was not demonic, because I hate that word, but it was a malevolent case that we were working on. And what it was is some of Charles Manson's people, after he killed the actress down in Southern California,
yeah.
they took off and went up north and rented this house in Stockton from a motorcycle gang. And they actually killed a bunch of people in the house. And we had all kinds of activity in that house because of all that. We actually found two bodies that were buried underneath the house. We actually called the police in and actually helped close a cold case.
Wow. That's That's something right there when you can actually help solve a, you know, a cold case.
Yeah, that was really bad. The motorcycle gang was there before Charles Manson's people. They had actually killed a drug dealer, chopped his body up in the bathtub, and chopped it up in pieces and buried it in the backyard. And we're not sure if it was him or one of the bikers that died in there, but we weren't provoking because we don't believe in provoking, but we were trying to figure out who it was, and they didn't want us there. And I was actually picked up and thrown down a flight of stairs.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I've experienced being tossed out of a room into the hallway. Jeff actually witnessed it, and it wasn't just me. It was two other investigators. So, yeah, I know that feeling. It's not fun. It scares the hell out of you.
Yeah, it scared the hell out of me for about a half second. Then it pissed me off, and then I went in there.
Yeah.
And maybe we had to.
You're like, how in the hell did this happen? And then you're trying to figure it out, you know, and you get kind of mad going, hey, that ain't right, you know. Because
yeah.
When I got tossed, I had my back to the room, so it came from behind, so it couldn't even face me. It had to sneak
yeah.
up behind me and toss me.
Yeah. Well, see, I'm a retired Marine. I did 20 years in seeing combat and everything, so when something like that happened to me, all that day was just pick me off.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Martin, I, and Jeff, last week we had a pretty good discussion. We didn't have a guest, so we just kind of ran it on some of the things and concerns that we have in the paranormal. And, you know, one of the discussions, going back to talking about demonic, it's the field now, the teams, they use that word too loosely and a lot.
Oh, yes.
And
it's over you.
And I think it's because of all the demonic type movies that have come out, and you watch shows on TV, and they're like, oh, there's a demon in this location, da 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 da. But
exactly,
you're not helping the client when you do an investigation. You go and they go, okay, what do you think's in the house? Oh, I think you have a demon. Okay, now you just scared the hell out of them, and you don't really know. You're not for sure, because those
exactly.
type of cases, and I've been on a few, those are multiple trick cases, lots of data collecting, lots of interviewing, and you can't determine that on one trip to a home.
There's no way. I don't care how long you've been in the field. I don't care if you've been in the field 30 years. You cannot determine what that is in one investigation. I mean, we've done cases where we've had to work with the clients for over a year before we figured out and finally took care of the problems. And that was telling a client you got a demon. That's like step one no-no in private investigations. You don't tell the client exactly what is in your house. You just tell them, yes, we think we got something here. We're not sure what it is, but we need to come back. Set up another investigation so we can get some more information to collect so we can determine what it is. You don't tell the client you got a demon.
Yeah.
Even
on some
of
the cases
that's unprofessional on their part.
Yeah, even on some of the cases that have actually been demonic, the initial thing, you know, once we kind of knew what we were dealing with, I didn't even tell the client that it was demonic. I told them it was malevolent. Because I didn't
exactly.
want, they were already scared as it was, and I didn't want to scare them more and, you know, their fear feeding this thing even more and it getting even more energy. So I just kind of kept them, you know, on a need-to-know basis for a while. And then when I finally contacted one of my friends that, he's a demonologist and he's really good at what he does, and I trust him. Because in the field, you got to kind of trust people, you know, you got to know them. You can't
exactly.
just call some Joe Blow that supposedly has a good reputation. I'm one of these that you have to be a colleague of mine, you know, somebody that I really trust, because there's people out there that claim to be this, that, and other, and they're not. And
exactly.
I didn't tell the clients until I knew I had him and he could come and help them. Then I explained the situation to him. Because I was bringing him in. But, it gets tossed around a lot, and we were talking about that last Sunday.
Yeah, I really hate that term. I mean, maybe one out of 100 cases you're going to get a real demonic case. The rest of it, yeah, it's going to be malevolent. Now, what you have different levels of malevolency in cases, but all of them are going to be inhuman spirits. And the only reason they're malevolent is because either they don't realize they're dead and they're frustrated because they can see you and they're trying to communicate with you and you're ignoring them, so they're getting pissed. And now they're doing things to get your attention. And so somebody that doesn't know what they're doing will take that, oh, it's demonic, you know, something like that. You really got to know what you're doing.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, one thing that I've come across, there are spirits out there that either A, I mean, because all the investigations that we've done, you know, as an investigator, you start to realize, going through all the evidence and experiences, these spirits all carry their personality. However they were in life, that's the way they are on the other side. And so if you're an asshole in life, you're an asshole in death. And
exactly, we feel the same way.
And so some of these spirits, if they want to scare the hell out of you and they want you completely out of their house, you know, we've come across spirits that don't like the family that's in the home because that home was their home when they were alive and they don't believe that anybody else should be living there, right? They still think it's their home even though they're dead. And
exactly.
So in order to scare the hell out of the client, they'll act like they are something like a demonic case. They'll scratch you. They'll do this. They'll move things, you know, and they'll mimic things that a demonic case would have, you know, and that's where these inexperienced teens are like, oh, you got three scratches, then it's got to be demonic. No, malevolent spirits can scratch the hell out of you too, you know. And
you know, there's only three places that
go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, there's only three places that if anybody worth their salt would know that there's only three locations where a demonic will scratch. That's why how you can tell if it's a demonic case.
Yeah. And, you know, they work on, in a demonic case, they have entry points. They work on your spinal region. There's three entry points on your spine that are involved when it comes to possession or any of that type of stuff. Because I've actually dealt with a possession case, and after it was all said and done, and I did some research because at that time I wasn't that knowledgeable. I mean, this kind of all happened at a whim to one of my team members, but after it was all over and we got it taken care of and I did some research, then I went back and asked this person about their experience and how their body felt afterwards. And sure enough, those entry points that I read about in several different books, those were the actual spots on this person's body that were completely just sore to the touch after it was over with. And I was like, that is really interesting. It correlates with all the information that I've gotten.
Right.
So,
and see, that's what you did. You went and did your research and made sure you knew what you were dealing with before you just made the determination.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had an investigator get possessed on an investigation. We were investigating with another team, and we were friends with that team, but we weren't very knowledgeable of some of the members and what some of the members were involved in. And one of the members was involved in dark witchcraft. And when we went to this particular location, this cemetery that does have a demonic force there, because we did so many investigations out there and collecting data with this thing and then we did some research on the land, and a satanic group had been going out there and doing rituals, so this door had been opened up, and this particular person decided to go out there and challenge it and call it out while we were there, and it just basically decided to pick one of the weakest links out there, and it just happened to be somebody on my team, and it it's something out of a Hollywood movie. You know, it sticks. It's burned in my brain forever. The experience that I had looking in somebody's eyes that were black, and all the crazy things that was coming out of this girl's mouth, and yeah, it was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. Jeff, I scared a lot of him. I called him, and he heard some of it going on in the background, and he was just like, "What in the hell is going on?" I said, "Well, hell, come to us."
Yeah, so, stuff like that's nothing to mess with. But, you know, if I would have been out there and that team would have done that, I'd have grabbed all my team members and I would have left.
Oh, that's what we did. That's what we did. We, as soon, because it started to manifest on one of their team members. She was completely white. Every piece of electronic in her hands and her pockets went dead. She had that, the deer in the headlights kind of look like, I'm here, but nobody's home. And, they took her to the car and started throwing holy water on her, and it was burning her and whatnot. And, of course, my father, who's now he's 66 years old, he's part of my team, and I wanted to get him the hell out of there. He has heart problems and whatnot. And so we loaded up, and apparently this thing, when they stopped it from getting in this person, while we were going down the road, the girl that was with us was in the back seat. And she, just out of the blue, it was quiet, we're driving down the road, and we're probably a couple miles from the cemetery, and she said, my arms are going numb. And I was like, that's kind of odd for somebody to say that. And then it was quiet, and then she just started laughing, you know, kind of an evil kind of giggle. I was like, what the hell? And I took my seatbelt off and turned around and looked, and her pupils, you know, she's got brown eyes, her pupils were solid black. And I was like, holy shit. So I reached in my bag, pulled out my Bible, turned around, and slapped the Bible on her head. And this was all just instinct, right? I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And slapped the Bible on her head, and she started convulsing. And as she convulsed, the Bible slipped off her forehead, and I had burned her forehead with that Bible. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, no. This is bad, you know?
Yep.
So it was an experience, and ever since that experience, Jeff will tell you, we did a lot of research and really, you know, went into, you know, really doing some research on all this and getting more knowledge so that we were never caught off guard ever again and know how to protect ourselves now and, you know, help other people. So
yeah,
it took
good.
One of those kind of experiences there for us to say, well, we don't know anything about this. We need to stop and start researching.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much how we got started on getting deeper into the education. We went on a case, and my wife got attacked, and it was so bad that she gets migraines, and
mm-hmm.
that's what it did. It attacked her, and she got such a massive migraine that she started convulsing and throwing up in our bedroom, and I actually had to call the ambulance and have her rushed to the hospital.
Wow.
It was after that incident we said, you know, too much. We need to know more than what we know right now. And so that's
mm-hmm.
what we got into, learning other things about how to cleanse and bless. And my wife is a sensitive. So she learned, you know, started learning how to put bubble around herself to protect herself. And now we're going through classes, learning how to become demonologists.
Yeah. You know, I don't think, Martin, you would ever get attacked, would you, Martin? I think they're scared of you.
yeah. No, I haven't run. And this is the weird thing, like, you know, I do tell people that I don't really believe, like, that kind of stuff exists. But I do believe it exists. It's just I haven't run across it. But I think when it comes to, say, demonic activity, it's like 1% of 1% of all investigations that all teams
mm-hmm.
worldwide do. I mean, because it's not.
Oh, yeah.
And personally, I think, like, the people that have dealt with it don't like to talk about it, you know. They don't like to jump on Facebook and update a status while they're still at the property.
No. So, yeah, I see that all the time with people on Facebook. Oh, we're going to this place, and we're going to send you videos while we're there. I'm like, okay, have fun.
Right, right. But I haven't run across anything so bad that I've ran out of a property before.
Yeah, we've never run out of a property either. I mean, like I said earlier, you know, we've had some cases where they've been pretty nasty, but we've never run away from a case.
Mm-hmm. No. And, you know, one of the more haunted locations that all three of us have been to, Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, that place is freaking haunted.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that location
now,
several times.
We actually spent the weekend there. You know, we got there Saturday morning, and we got to investigate that building. We had the building, possession of the building, for 26 hours, so it was crazy.
Wow. Yeah, I've heard that hospital name a couple times on Facebook.
Yeah, it's, you know, we're here in Texas, and it's over in Tennessee, and we took a 13-hour road trip, went over there. But, you know, it was a long-ass drive, but it was well worth it, in my opinion.
Well, I'll have to get my team out there to do it sometime.
What was the name of that place? That hospital that we did last year?
Yeah, Old South. That's what I was talking
about. Yeah, it is kind of funny because I don't usually get scared on investigations because it just, to me, it's more science-based than it is, like, you know, fear-based. But that place actually did kind of creep me out a little bit. It may have been just the fact that I know I was going into an abandoned hospital and I was going into, you know, supposedly uncharted territory, but it did kind of creep me out a little bit, especially when you're by yourself. Like, when you're by yourself, you feel like, I do a lot of photography, right? And so that morning before we left, I just kind of walked the whole building by myself, and I had a recorder strapped on me, and I'm just, you know, let the recording go and, you know, just taking pictures for myself. And when I got to the third floor in that place, I literally felt like people were looking out of their doors at me. And I was like, wow, this is a really creepy feeling, you know?
Well, one of them was me. I was looking out my door at you.
Well, I mean, you spent most of the morning pretending to be a beach whale on that blow-up mattress. I remember that.
There was no pretending. I really was.
I know that me and Will were laughing our ass off for a good solid hour because every time you shifted on that, I don't even know what kind of mattress that was, but it was making all kinds of noises, and it was just so freaking funny.
It was a blow-up mattress.
Yeah, it was making all kinds of creaking and all kinds of stuff, and we couldn't stop laughing. So, you are entertainment.
See, I even entertain people.
There's always one
sleep,
in
the other
group that has that.
Well, with you,
there's always that one clown.
Oh, we're all clowns, but Jeff not only gets the heat from people in the group, the spirits even make fun of him. We've gotten EVPs of spirits talking shit to Jeff.
Yeah, notice they didn't do it to my face. They want to do that shit at a level I can't hear them.
Now, have you noticed when you're doing EVPs, I always ask this to kind of just see if it's constant throughout the field. When you're doing EVPs, have you noticed when you're going back over your evidence that spirits have a tendency to talk more when you're not paying attention to them? Like if you're talking to somebody on your team and you're not even really asking questions or anything, It seems like they like to jump in conversations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one of the things that we do is we have two voice recorders that we use. We have one at the 360 mic, and we run that one from the time we start an investigation until we end an investigation. And then we have another one that we use for our actual EVP sessions. And, you know, we'll do like 3 to 4 minutes, no more than 4 minute sessions. But, when we go to listen to our long EVPs, yeah, spirits constantly are in there trying to interject with people's conversations, and we're not even actually doing an EVP session. We get tons of EVPs.
Nice.
Anytime I feel like they're trying to do that, I tell them to shut up. It's rude to interrupt.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm – it gets kind of repetitive when you do the same old every time you're out, because, you know, you're spending hours and hours doing this stuff. And after doing it for several years, you know, you get tired of – you know, of course, you kind of have to do the same kind of routine when you're dealing with a client, because you're starting from scratch when you're going into somebody's home, an unknown place. So you kind of have to try to ask the basic questions to try to get some information. But when you're going to a location that other teams have gone, you know, a haunted location like that, I try to mix it up. I don't – what's your name, that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I try to mix it up too.
Yeah, I think in this field, if you're going to be successful and you're going to help advance the field, you got to think outside the box and not just walk around with an EVP recorder and a millimeter or K2 meter and do the same old every time. You got to try new things.
I try to tell my people on my team that when we're doing EVP sessions, try to be more interactive. If you get certain questions answered after the first session, then go with those questions and ask more detail.
Yeah.
More information. Don't just keep saying, okay, well, we already asked the age and name. Don't go back there and do it again. If you got an age or something like that, what year did you die, you know, or, you know, how did you die, you know, anything to get some kind of interactivity conversation with the spirits going.
Right. Yeah. Our group ball asses can come up with some stuff. Because I know, because I was going over some evidence, and Mr. Jeff over there, we try to mix and match. During our investigation, we might do the typical divide the group up into teams of two or three, and go throughout the building, depending on, you know, how big the building is. There might be one team at a time. And then the next session we'll do where our DVR cameras are. We'll stick one person in a room where there's a DVR camera where we can watch them from home base and let them do an isolation EVP by themselves.
That's fun.
And then we'll
right.
do group experiments or EVP sessions and get the whole team in a room and try to communicate to kind of mix it up and see what the spirit likes to communicate, right? Do they like to talk to a small group, an individual, or a big group? And Jeff was in a room by himself.
Male or female.
Yeah, exactly. We've done that too, where we've had boy groups and girl groups, you know. And you just kind of have to mix and match. But, of course, Jeff over there, I'm listening to the evidence, going through his isolation EVP. And he asks, Jeff, what was the question? I'll let you say.
Okay, my defense, I was hoping for an EVP that says something like, what in the hell, when I asked this question. But the question was, have you ever been in love with a midget weighing 39 pounds?
I heard that, and I had to stop the recorder and just start laughing. I was like, what in the hell is that? And, of course, Jeff's like, well, did I get a response? I was like, no.
Like, did you think you would?
That same session, I started to sing Red River Valley as well.
Yeah, but one of the things that I started to do whenever I sit down and do like an EVP session, it'll be like once or twice a night, but I'll do an EVP session and then I'll anticipate an answer and then I'll start with the next question, like if they were answering me. And believe it or not, a couple times it's actually worked. It's pretty weird.
Well,
yeah.
If you know you're going to get an activity there, then yeah, you know, that would be a good way to do it. Just assume that they answered it and then go on to the next question.
Yeah.
Because, again, you're being interactive, so you're keeping the conversation going.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, with my group's kind of on a long sabbatical vacation. We got so tired of all the drama and craziness going on amongst the paranormal teams. We just had to bow out for a while and trying to recharge our batteries. But one thing that the team's going to be working on whenever we decide to crank back up, with some of the stuff I'm going to start working on myself, testing different theories. And, you know, how many people out there, and this would either be passed down from other paranormal investigators to this person, you know, a new investigator or whatnot, or from the television shows. You know, you go into a place and, for instance, cold spots, and you're standing there with your temp and you've already done your baseline reading and it's 70 degrees throughout the location. It's a controlled environment. And all of a sudden it drops to 30 degrees. You know, that's a 40-degree drop. And they're like, well, that's a cold spot. It must be, you know, and then you get an EVP a little bit later on your recorder. And so you're like, okay, in theory, the spirit drew energy out of the air, made it colder, and left us an EVP. Well, how do we know that? Has that been tested? A lot of the stuff we catch ourselves telling or saying is based on other people that have told us this, their experiences. But how much of it's actually been tested by paranormal investigators to back it up?
Well, we actually, that's one of the things actually we do test, and I think it is valid point. They're drawing the energy because heat is energy. So what we feel is they're drawing the energy from the heat. That's what makes it get colder. So they can manifest either enough to do a EVP session or manifest themselves in a partial full body apparition or whatever they're trying to do, depending on how much energy is there. We tested that many numerous occasions, and we're pretty sure that that's a valid fact. One of the things we're trying to do next season, because we're like you, we're getting ready to go into hiatus for the holidays. Yeah, we shut down from like Thanksgiving through New Year's. And one of the things that me, because I'm the science guy on my team, and one of the things that I've been hearing about this past year is I just bought a Geiger counter. Because I've been hearing from some other teams, and I've read it in some people's books, that when that heat drops where it gets cold spots, that there's also some kind of radiation being thrown off. So I want to test that theory next year when we start up again. I want to use my Geiger counter. So when we start getting those cold spots, I want to use a Geiger counter to see if I'm getting any type of radiation from that cold spot.
Yeah, another theory that, and Martin and I have talked about it numerous times, but I'm going to actually, even if my team's not going at that point, I'm going to test it myself. With the whole vibration theory, especially dealing with homes, because, you know, homes that go under renovation and even homes that we've investigated, like Kill House Manor, that's close to a railroad track. You know, the theory is with renovating and it creates vibration with the tools and whatnot, and these places have a tendency to have a lot of more activity. And we've even noticed, as instance earlier, I said the Hill House Manor, it's a location that paranormal teams get to investigate. It's just set up for, you know, investigating. And the whole house shakes when a train passes. And one of the things I want to try is, which already, we got it halfway built, but we're going to put a low bass frequency speaker in there and basically artificially shake the house. Shake the energy of that house with low bass frequency and see if it increases activity. Because I want to see what happens when it comes to vibrations, how that has a place in paranormal activity.
That would be a good experiment.
Yeah. So, and that, you know, that's the whole thing about teams out there. If you think outside of the box and try testing things, that's the only way I believe we're going to get anywhere, you know, because it's kind of what Martin and I talked about last week, and Jeff, you know, we've kind of hit a stalemate, kind of where we're not any further than we were. You know, I've been in it for 4 years, and we're not any, except for maybe technology-wise, we're not any further along. And I think if more teams start, and like your team's doing experiments too, more teams thought like that, that we would actually start making some progress.
Yeah, because like, you're right. The problem is we're getting so many new teams in that they don't have the knowledge like some of the older teams, and so they're not doing anything to progress the field. They're just doing what, you know, we've already done 6 years ago, the EVPs, you know, all that good stuff. You know, the videos, let's see if we can get something on video. They're not coming in advanced enough to start thinking out of the box. And more of the older teams like us and your team, we've got to start thinking out of the box and start picking up the pace and trying to come up with new different ways to try and prove some theories.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And unlike some teams out there, not sit on your results, share your results with other colleagues in the field. And because I've done some actual science, you know, some of those teams out there that say they're scientific based, right? They say they're scientific based. And then I ask them, okay, what makes you scientific based? Well, we got all this equipment that we use at the location. I said, that doesn't make you scientific-based. Scientific-based is when you actually do experimentation in a controlled environment. You know, I said, go back to your high school when you were in science class, the scientific method. When you start using scientific method, you're testing theories, you're trying different things on your investigation, right? You don't have to do an experiment the entire time you're there, but set some time out to actually do an experiment while you're there. That's when you're scientific, because you're using the scientific method. And
great.
A lot of my friends that are more on the scientific research side of paranormal, you know, that's what they do. They do experiments and whatnot. You know, we've had that conversation before, and I said, I totally agree. You know, just walking around with a mail meter doesn't make you scientific. You're carrying a piece of equipment.
Yeah. That's not scientific.
Especially like you said, even if you walk around with a mail meter, you don't even know how the thing works. Well, how are you scientific? You know? So I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, us old fogies in the field have to pick up the pace. But one thing, Martin, and I was going to tell you this before we got on air. You and I need to get together and try to test our theory on, you know how you talked about, mentioned several times about how now you're wondering how much us as human beings can possibly create EVPs or create voices that go through the ghost box?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we need to try to figure out a way to test that shit.
That is actually being tested by teams right now.
It's going to have to be in a controlled location it can't be. What I want to do is to do it without being completely in the dark. Like, we'll go to a location with the lights on, you know, and write down, you know, say an EVP. Well, write down a session, you know, the questions you're going to ask, and then when you ask it, write down your immediate thoughts and then see how that correlates. Because, I don't know, man, like, essentially we're all spirit-based. We just happen to have a body. So it only makes sense to me that you can produce EVPs just as much as a departed person could, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it kind of goes back to
that.
Do what? Go ahead.
I actually know a couple teams that are actually trying that experiment right now.
Nice. Well, I'm glad to hear other people have thought about it, man, because it's been one of those things that's been bugging me for like a last year or so.
Yeah, because one thing that we did this year was we did experiments with the ghost box or EVP sessions where we took the human element out of the picture, because so many folks, you know, are on the edge of, well, with the SB7, the ghost box, the hack shack, all these different pieces of equipment that uses radio. You know, there's a lot of contaminants, things that you could pick up that could produce something, you know, that you think is actual paranormal. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm going to test it by taking the human thought out of it, because I don't want our thoughts, our brain, or any part of us influencing what comes out of that box. And so we've done some experiments where, like, for instance, and one of them was just on a whim, you know, you take a coin that you just reach in your pocket and grab a coin in the dark and don't even look at it and ask the ghost box to tell you, call heads or tails. And the spirit box said tails. We tossed the coin up, let it hit the floor, turned on our flashlights and found it, and sure enough, it was tails. Well, in our brains, we have a 50-50 shot of thinking whether it's heads or tails to, you know, actually influence that box for our thought to come out of that box. But we didn't know, and we took it a step further. Once we saw it was tails, we turned our flashlights off, and we asked the spirit box to tell us the year that's on the coin. And neither one of us knew the year because, I mean, it was dark, and we weren't up on the coin. We left it on the floor. And it said 1985, and we turned on our flashlights and picked it up, and it was 1985. So there's an example of us not knowing the actual answer, so we couldn't influence the environment, and we got a result through the spirit box.
That's cool.
I feel like that one experiment we tried we're testing Mike's ability as a medium. And I grabbed a deck of cards, and I took the deck out, and I was facing it down, and I told Mike, I was like, I'm going to toss the deck up, and let me know what card will be facing down when it all lands on the ground. And sure enough, there was only one card that was face down, and all the rest of them landed face up. And Mike had said, oh, that one's going to be an eight. I think it was like eight of hearts or something like that, and he was spot on with it. And I was like, holy crap, man.
Well,
he was talking to
a female spirit that was in the room with us, and
yeah.
She actually told Mike what the card was going to be that's face down. And you look on video when Martin tosses it up, you see one of the cards kind of, it doesn't, when they all go up and come down, one of them kind of floats there for a second. You know, just for a split second, it's staying in the air longer, a little bit longer than the others, and it hits the ground, and that's the one that's face down.
Yeah, it was an interesting night for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, that's some of the, you know, the stuff that we're wanting to work on, and it's good to hear that there are other teams out there trying to test these theories out, because we're the people that are actually in the field, you know, staying up all night, you know. We need to be doing some of this stuff to try to see if we can get any answers, because we're all in it, and there ain't a damn one of us that's an expert. We don't have all the answers,
exactly.
Because if we had all the answers, we'd stop doing it.
Exactly. There would be nothing else to prove.
Yeah, exactly. And I've told numerous people, you know, just everyday people that get in a conversation with me about paranormal, and I tell them, I say, look, don't, if you come across anybody in the field that claims to be an expert, run. Because there's no expert. There's not a single one of us that each time we go out and do this paranormal investigation, we don't come back with more questions than we did when we left.
Exactly. You know, there's another experiment that we're getting ready to try next season, too. You guys were talking about taking out the human factor away, is we want to take a voice recorder with already questions on it, and just leave and let that run with another recorder there recording and see if we can get any EVP responses from the questions that are being asked from the other voice recorder.
Yeah.
That would be pretty cool. And then also it would help, you know, some people think that spirits can read your mind while you're at a location. Well, I mean, it would also help, you know, prove that theory, because if a spirit's there and it's like, oh, that's just a recorder, I mean, they're going to respond or not respond, you know. It would be cool to see that in action.
Yeah, we tried this one time, but, you know, with experiments, you got to do them multiple times.
You can't do it just one time and think, okay, you got to.
Yeah,
something.
You just can't do it one time and go, well, we didn't get any results, so it must be a crappy experiment, because, you know, you got to keep at it. So we've only done it once, so we're still going to continue to do it. But what I did was, as founder, I wrote down a bunch of questions on index cards, and I put it in a sealed envelope, and I selected three members of my team to go on one of the floors of this abandoned hotel we were doing, and we set up a tripod with a video camera on it, and I had them set down a recorder, and we turned the video camera on, started recording, and I handed them the envelope that was sealed. I was the only one that knew the questions. They had no clue what the questions were that were going to be used in this experiment. And what I had them do was they were all face down, so when they pulled them out, they didn't see the question. So they held the question up to the video camera, so the video camera, you could see what the question was. And they didn't say a word. They just held it up for so many minutes. They put it down and went to the next question. So two different things we're testing there is, can a spirit read that card and respond on the EVP recorder? Two, if the investigator don't know the question, they don't know the answer. Therefore, the human element has been removed again. And we tried that once. We didn't get any results, but that doesn't mean we won't next time. So that's another thing we've done.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, you know, it's just one of those things. You're just sitting on the – I'm just sitting here on the couch one night, and these theories just pop in my head. I'm like, man, we need to try this shit. You know? So, what do you guys use the ghost box? Any?
We use the SP7. Not a lot, but we do use it maybe once or twice on an investigation. And that's another thing, you know, people who use these ITC stuff, they're not shutting it down. You know, if you're doing a ghost box session or SB7 session, whatever you want to do, it's just like using a Ouija board. You know, you open that thing up and you don't know what's coming through. When you get done, you need to shut that thing back down properly so that nothing keeps coming through that portal you just opened. And a lot of people don't realize how to do that. they think, okay, well, we just did a session, and then they turn it off thinking, okay, well, we're done. That's everything. No.
You
shut the shit off,
but
you didn't shut that
point
down you opened up.
Yeah. You bring up a valid point, because that's one thing we – and Martin did it too. I mean, Martin did a – what, 2 years, Martin? You turned that ghost box on every day, and you had to shut it down properly.
Yeah, hold on quick.
But, yeah, it's just like a Ouija board. It's just using technology, and you're communicating with something. You don't know what it is. And if you open that door of communication, you got to shut it, or that door is left open, and you don't know what's going to come through.
Exactly.
Yeah. I spent 2 years working with a ghost box off and on. Like, a lot of it was home-based research, and people call me a madman for it. But I don't know. Like, it was weird because at the beginning it was kind of like, a couple responses here and there, but then there towards the end of it, like, I would turn the ghost box on and they would respond to me and be like, hey, it's Martin, or it was the weirdest thing, but I made sure that, like, every time I used it, I had to shut it down. Like, I had to sit there and I would be like, okay, well, this session is over, see y'all guys later, and then I would sit there and physically wait for them to say bye, then I would shut my ghost box off. I mean, that's kind of, it's necessary. I mean, you have to shut down that portal, otherwise you just leave it open,
And you're just leaving yourself open for anything to come through, and we've gone into cases where people have done that, doing their own EVPs or something like that in their own home, and then all of a sudden, where they never had any paranormal activity before, now they've got all kinds of activity going on, and I'm wondering what the heck happened.
Yeah. Hey, it was kind of funny because during that time, my house was like a safe haven for spirits. I mean, and it was, I don't mind it so much because I'm not raising kids, and I don't, my house isn't full of people all the time, so I was able to deal with it. But it was kind of funny because I'd gone to like a paranormal lecture that popped up in my town. I was like, oh, cool, I'm gonna go to this. And there was like 500 people there. And then as I was, as it was over and I was leaving, and some lady tugged on my shirt. She was like, hey. I turned around. I was like, yeah. She's like, I just want to let you know I'm a medium, and I don't know, things are following you. Like, she's like, it's like you brought a crowded room with you. And I started laughing, and I explained the research that I was doing because I wanted to either prove or disprove that the ghost box worked, at least on my end. And after I explained it to her, she's like, that's what it is. She's like, I don't know, it just feels like you brought a whole crowded room that are just waiting to talk to you, and for some odd reason they're just hanging out. I was like, yeah. But, yeah, and now that my research has kind of stopped on it, I hadn't stopped on it, but I just don't do it nearly as often as I used to. My house is back to normal again.
Yeah.
That's good. Like I said, you got to really be careful when you're doing that stuff because you don't know who's coming through.
Yeah. That was another thing. Like, I was really careful during the whole research, and if I started getting any type of negativity at all, I was kind of like, well, okay, this session is over, because that's not something that I want to channel through on my ghost boxes. I don't want to sit here and try to communicate with something that's just going to be vile and nasty to me, It's like, why would I want to keep that door open?
Exactly. I mean, I don't know if you guys watched the any of the shows on TV, but if you ever watch Ghost Adventures and Zach's doing his little ghost box session, I swear to God, and I've been listening and I've been watching, almost every show, it's the same voice coming through that box.
Oh, yeah. I agree. With the exception
of the places that he's getting stuff, I don't think he's getting anything from that place. He's getting whatever is attached to him, talking to him through that box.
Yeah, and it's usually like a deep voice guy. I've noticed that. Like, on occasion, he'll get females come through, but most times it's the dude.
And it's always the same tone of voice coming through that box.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought they'd learned their lessons, and then the new season kicked off. The new season kicked off this year, and they went to the the Exorcist house in Missouri, and those dumbasses put the spirit box on a Ouija board in the room where the supposed exorcism happened, and one of those voices that came through was not human. I could tell right off the bat, especially when it the way it said, you know, way the voice was, and it said Satan in Spanish, Diablo. Oh, it was freaky. I was like, you dumbasses. But, you know, a lot of people, and especially, you know, we're going back to talking about new teams that pop up all the time, all these people that want to get into the field, they don't understand the risks involved when you become an investigator. It's not a safe hobby by any means. You never know you're going to come across. You never know if something's going to follow you home. You can do every kind of, you know, we do an opening prayer and we do a closing prayer at the end of the investigation. We cleanse ourselves. We do all kinds of things, but there are times where you get followed home, you know, and then you got to cleanse your own home. And they don't realize the risks that happen. Martin, didn't you say you had some spirits follow you from Old South Pittsburgh? I guess Martin's not listening right now. But yeah, and I actually have one still here in my house, and I've tried to blast him out and whatnot, and I think he's more kind of attached to me or whatnot, but he's not a bad spirit whatsoever. He's a practical joker. I don't even know he's here unless somebody comes in and has abilities, and then they'll say, you got a little boy in your hallway. And, of course, the little boy is a spirit, but he's not actually a little boy. He actually passed away when he was 43, 45, somewhere in there. But he appears as a boy, but he talks like a 45-year-old. And he came from a location we were at. And when I have psychics that come on our show, you know, and they say they can do a remote read, I always try to test them to see if they can pick up, you know, the spirit that's here. And they always do. Every one of them has described him to a T and whatnot. And they basically tell me that he liked our energy as a group because we were practical jokers. We laughed. We had fun. And he liked our energy. And we kind of broke the attachment that he had to that house. So he hangs out here. He don't do anything, but... He's here.
Well, there is a theory out there that spirits, even though they've died and say they died like they're 90 years old, they can come back and project themselves at a younger age because that's where they were happiest in their lifetime.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and when we were going on cases and whatnot, the psychics that we have, or mediums we have in the group, would actually pick up on that, you know, some of them that had the gift of being able to see spirits, you know, they're like, well, I can pull their energy. They're 80 years old, but they're appearing as a young woman, you know, and I totally believe that, you know, if I can appear as a spirit, I'm not going to appear the way I look, you know, 70, 80 years old. I'm going to appear, you know, when I happiest time of my life or whatnot. But, yeah, I definitely believe in that theory. So what other things that you got any big, you and your team got any big plans for next year? Any locations that y'all planning on trying to get to that you hadn't been to yet?
Well, we just did about 3 weeks ago. We were down in a town just south of us, about 45 minutes, called Hanford. And we did a fundraiser. We did a paranormal 101 class and then slash fundraiser for the Dale Carnegie Museum that they have there. because they needed a new roof, and we raised about $1,600 for them to get a new roof. But during that that event, we met a owner of a Chinese theater that's down in that area. So that's one of the things we want to try to get to the first of the year, get into this Chinese theater. It's never been investigated before, but all the actors and the owner that talked to us gave me his card. He says they've got numerous activity in there, so we want to go in and see what's going on in there.
Nice.
So, yeah, we like getting places where it's never been investigated before, so we can go in and get some good raw footage, you know, of evidence. And then we want to go to a couple places we've been to before. We want to go back down to the Point Sur Lighthouse down in the Santa Barbara area, because I've got some new equipment that's coming in the next couple of weeks, so I want to go down there and use this new equipment that I've got coming in. One of them is the Geiger counter I was telling you about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, because of what I do, my team does the cleansing and blessings and everything, we get a lot of private investigations. So we got a lot coming up next year. We're going to be busy. That's why we take holidays off, because we just get so inundated with cases and counseling on other cases. It's ridiculous.
It's also good because, you know, you have departed family members that like to come visit you during the holidays and stuff, and it's no bueno to have, you know, spirits follow you from locations to interfere with whatever your family members are doing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, with me, because I mentioned it earlier, I'm the Western Regional Director for United Paranormal International, and so I get a lot of phone calls from people all over the place. And, you know, so I'm always talking to people in other states. I even get people from other countries to call me, and I have to find a team in their area, to help them out. So I'm kind of like a third party, matching investigations up with teams in the area. So that keeps me busy also.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, when you're trying to schedule for a team for the year, because we always the end of the year would be our planning stage for the next year, and we would start trying to book some locations that we wanted to go to, you know, and the first year or two we were trying to do one a month, right? Well, it was good in theory until the fact that you never knew when a client was going to call you. And at one point we had, I believe, four cases going on at the same time, you know. So I was constantly on the phone checking up on different clients and trying to set up when we could go to their house. And so it got really overwhelming with that and trying to, you know, plan for a trip to go to a certain location. So we had to start spreading it out like one every 2 months or whatever, because we didn't know when those clients were going to call. We had to, you know, lay out some time for that, because, you know, when they're calling, you know, they're 99% of the time they're scared off their rocker, and they're needing immediate help to try to, you know, figure out what's going on. So yeah, it can get real hectic.
Oh, yeah. This weekend and last weekend is the first time this year that we've had two weekends in a row we didn't have any investigations.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
usually it's every Friday or Saturday night we have an investigation.
We stopped back in the summer, in July, and so I haven't been investigating since July, and I've been able to do some other things, you know, because I'm the founder of the group, so
when we were going, I was nonstop. I always tried to explain that to my team members. I said, you know, you guys, you put in time with the team, but I'm living it 365 days a year because I'm the one people call, you know. So I'm constantly doing things for the team. And so I was like, when we took this break, I was just like, man, feels good to just relax for a little while, you know, after doing it for so many years. The time off has been great. It's kind of recharged my batteries and my interest in the field.
Yeah, usually so, when I have downtime, that's when I'm researching for my next book.
Maybe I'll write a book about Jeff and all his antics over the years. That'll be a great comedic book. Jeff must be asleep. Yep, Martin, I think we lost him.
Do what now?
I said I was making a comment about Jeff, and it's dead silent, so I think Jeff fell asleep.
Yeah, he dozed off.
Oh, man. So, yeah. Well, that's cool that y'all do that. And when's your second book coming out?
My second book, The Paranormal Dictionary, will be out the first week of next month. You'll be able to find that Amazon.com with my first book.
Oh, sweet. And that's awesome. Yeah, I was looking to add to my library.
It's 600 pages, like I said, it's over 2,500 words and definitions covering not only the paranormal, but it's covering crypto, zoology, ufology, and demonology.
Oh, awesome. It's definitely going to be a must-have in my house because I study, like, you know, when people say they study paranormal, I kind of like to hope that they study more than just ghosts, you know?
Exactly.
So it's going to be cool to be able to cross-reference everything that's going on, you know? Because, I mean, there's still a couple terms, like, say, even in cryptozoology, I'm like, huh? But it'd be good to know that, you know, what they're talking about when I can just easily look it up.
Right. Well, the reason I wrote the book is, you know, there's so many websites and people have, you know, they have maybe like 10 or 15 words and definitions here and there, but there was no one place you could go to resource whatever you were looking for. So I figured, you know, well, nobody's done it, so let me go ahead and put all the words in one place, in one book, so that people, you know, can have one place to look for it.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm going the weekend after Thanksgiving. I'm going just north of Houston in the Sam Houston National Forest with a buddy of mine. His whole family is a Bigfoot hunting team, and they've been doing this for years. And they got a secret location down there that they go to and do a lot of research, and they've caught some interesting vocals and whatnot, footprints they've casted and of this creature. And I've never been Bigfoot hunting. You know, I've always wanted to go, being a paranormal investigator. And so I hit him up last month, and he's like, hell yeah, we're going to go on an expedition at the end of November. And I said, hell, I'm coming. He said, well, bring your paranormal equipment because there's some paranormal activity going on out here, too. I was like, sweet.
Yeah, there you go. You can get birds with one shot.
Hell yeah. I'm going to lasso that Bigfoot. But, yeah, I've always wanted to learn from a Bigfoot. You know, I got friends that are cryptozoologists, but they're so freaking busy because they handle like Ken Gerhardt's a good friend of mine, and he's just crazy busy with shows that he's been on and all the phone calls he takes throughout the state of Texas. So I wanted to actually get with an actual team that that goes out in the field and researches Bigfoot. So I finally found one that's around, you know, around my area. So I'm going to go hang out with them for the weekend. I said, dude, do you do it the whole time you're out there for the weekend camping? He goes, hell no. He said, we'll set up things. We'll take a break. We might go fishing, you know. He said, well, you know, we relax a lot, you know, as far as that, too. It's just like being on a camping trip. We just chase Bigfoot on top of it. So maybe I'll come back and have some cool EVPs to play on the show.
There you go.
Now, have you had any experiences with UFOs out there in California?
Not personally, but where I'm from, where I live right now in Fresno, it's actually a hot spot for UFO sightings. We get UFO stuff out here constantly. We belong to a larger group called Fresno Paranormal Research Society. Some of the members are on our team, but it's what it is. It covers not only the paranormal, but it does ufology, crypto, and all that. And one of our members in there, his name is Michael Banty, and he's big in the ufology area. And yeah, we've got he's got videotape of supposed UFOs in flying over top of Fresno a lot. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, my dad had a experience out there. I can't even remember the Air Force base that he was stationed at before he went to Vietnam. But the Air Force base he was at over there in California, he actually was coming out of his barracks and looked up, and there was a disc-shaped UFO hovering above the base. And of course, Dad was trained in identifying aircraft, and he's like, to this day, he's like, I totally know that was nothing that we had in our arsenal of aircraft. He said that was a UFO, you know. And I was like, man, that's crazy.
Well, Fresno out here, we call high desert.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have like the barren sand and everything like that, but we're at the same elevation where it's dry all the year round, and it's really hot here. So we have a lot of open spaces, and then we also have the Sierra Mountains. So that's where a lot of the UFO sightings are, up in the mountains.
Gee. Yeah. On my other show I do on Tuesday nights, my co-host Jody, she's a paranormal investigator, but she's goes to MUFON meetings once a month, and she had the director of the group in Missouri that she belongs to and some of the other members come on a couple weeks ago on our show, and wow, the stories that they were telling us, man. I was like, damn it, now you want me to go chase UFOs too. I just don't have enough time for all of this.
No, I'd be dead if I tried to do it all.
Well, that's cool that your book will be coming out next month, and you said you can find it on Amazon?
Yeah, you can find it on Amazon.com. Actually, you can just go in there and pull up my name, and it'll pull up my books.
Sweet. Well, thanks so much for coming on tonight. We really appreciate it.
Well, I thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Hey, not a problem. We enjoy talking to new people. That's just the way we are.
Okay. Well, if you ever need anybody on your show again, let me know. I'm available.
All right. We appreciate it. Well, you have a great evening.
All right. You guys have a good one, too. Have a great holidays.
All right. All right.
Later. All right. Night. All right. Bye.
All right. Now, Martin, it's our opportunity to talk about Jeff, because Jeff is...
Did he really go off, or is he just not talking?
I don't know. He's not texting me crazy stuff tonight, so he must be asleep. Or he's just pretending. He's acting. Well, maybe.
Oh, man.
Hey, maybe that means tonight I'll play the closing music and I'll play Bruno's Mars.
You should.
Yeah.
We should play some Rihanna.
See, we're not getting a reaction from him, so, yeah.
Yeah, he goes off. He's going to wake up at like 2 in the morning and try to like start a conversation. Say, oh, yeah, I like EVPs.
Oh, man. Well, yeah. God, there was something else I was going to say tonight on the show after the guest left, but I can't even remember. It slipped my mind tonight. Yeah. Well, you know what? I don't even know what we could talk about now.
Oh, man. Oh, you know what we do need, though? And only because I'm browsing the website now. We need to find somebody who's willing to build new type of equipment, like paranormal equipment, and throw it on Kickstarter so they can make it better, you know?
Yeah.
Have crowdfunding. That way they can build the tools that we need that are just not available, you know?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. I don't know. I haven't had a new piece of equipment now and since I bought that stuff from Jeremy. And I try to stay away from the Paranology site just because the simple fact if I get on it, I'm going to want to buy something. So I just kind of try to stay away from it. But I know when it gets closer to Christmas, because every Christmas I buy myself something, a piece of equipment, you know.
Yeah.
I always enjoy it. It's kind of addicting, you know, waiting for that UPS truck to pull up in front of your house.
Dude, that's how that feels too, man. Hey, you know, I've actually learned something with any type of mail that you order. So, like, you order something from Amazon, right? You're like, oh, cool, it's going to get delivered today. Here's how it works out. If you're home for it, you'll be the last stop for that driver. If you have to leave and you go to work or you go to the store or something, you're going to be the first stop for that driver. I don't understand it. That's how it always works, man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you stay home, you're like, yeah, I'm going to catch UPS early, and then I'll go to work, and then 5:30 rolls around, and the UPS finally shows up. You're like, really? Where were you all day, man?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm going to have to figure something out to treat me for Christmas. I've spent a lot of money here on my hiatus upgrading my four-wheeler.
Oh, nice.
But, yeah, I got all kinds of stuff on it. I got an actual stereo system on my four-wheeler now. So,
nice.
I'm gonna use that to my advantage when we go Bigfoot hunting. Of course, Jody Parks, my co-host, she's the queen of burps, right? She owns the world record for loudest burp, longest burp, you name it. And she's going to record some of her burps, and they're crazy, you know, the amount of burp that comes out of this tiny body of hers. She's going to record some burps for me, and I'm going to load them up onto my MP3 player that I have on my four-wheeler when I go out to Bigfoot hunting. And I'm going to play those burps through the stereo out into the woods, see if I get a response.
Nice. You actually got to call Jeremy and get him to record his Bigfoot voice. He does a pretty good impersonation of Bigfoot, man. And I didn't expect it. I was like, nice. It's the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll probably be like a kid in a candy store. That, you know, these guys have been doing Bigfoot for a long time, so they'll probably be like, yeah, we're going to do this, and then they're like sitting around camp, and my ass is out walking around doing calls and shit. I'm probably going to get on the nerves because, you know, I'll be so hyped up trying to get some evidence.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wish I could take Jeff with us and put him in a female Bigfoot costume and see if we can attract a male.
Oh, man. He'd probably get, yeah, he would get messed with. He'd get kidnapped halfway through the night.
Where'd Jeff go? Well, Bigfoot took him off in the woods. We'll never see him again.
Oh, you see the tree shake like Ace Ventura, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely. Oh, man. But, yeah, you know, we don't have to worry about the end of the world talk this year. You know, last holiday season, it was
oh,
getting
yeah.
that end of the world talk, and here we are a year later, still breathing.
Heck yeah, man. I'm actually kind of waiting to see what the next end of the world people, you know what I'm saying? Because 2012 was like a really big one. So anything
mm-hmm.
else that comes out now, nobody's going to really pay attention. I know there's been a couple cults already formed up for Comet Ison, but nothing major.
Yeah. I may have to, when it gets closer to New Year's, I might have to pull out the old SB7 and see if I can get some predictions for next year and write them down, document them, and see if they actually happen.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, we know that you had some experience with that last year.
Oh, man. That still messes with me, man. Like, because, you know, when I watched the video and I was kind of like, oh, cool, you know, jihad is coming, blah, blah, blah. I kind of just left it at that. I didn't really pay that much attention until I saw the video again, like, in June. And it was talking about how Boston had bombs. I was like, what? I've had this whole time? There's nothing I could do about it, obviously, but it's just so weird. And then it messes with you because you wonder if it was there when you recorded it or it got put there after the fact, you know?
Yeah. Right, exactly. So, you know, the end of the year coming, the state of the mind of every human on the planet, it's like, okay, you know, they all have hopeful or plans or whatever it might be for the next year, resolutions, whatnot. So the energy of all of us humans is out there in the atmosphere in the world. So maybe the spirits will give me some insight on world affairs for next year.
That'd be pretty cool. They should tell you what kind of stock to invest in.
Yeah, right. Who's going to win the Super Bowl next year? Tell me right now.
Right. It would be
man,
pretty
if that
funny
would happen,
you,
I'd be a rich puppy.
If you asked for lotto numbers and they gave it to you and then, like, you went and played it and then it was actually lotto numbers for, like 2 months from the time you played. Like, dang it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. Well, since Jeff is MIA, I'm going to try to find us something to play.
I'm here. I'm just kind of dozing off.
Oh, he's alive.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
What's so funny is he wakes up when he hears that I'm browsing through the music. Comes out of a dead-ass sleep. Oh, fuck no, he ain't playing shit. Ah, Jeff, you are so damn funny.
I'm not. It's just natural.
I love when he gets tired and he's taking his medicine for the night. He just sounds so damn messed up.
Yeah. That's the kind of drunk I would like to be right now.
Do you want me to play us out, Jeff, or are you going to do it?
Yeah, go ahead and play us out.
Holy shit, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, man.
He has given me control of the music for tonight.
Bruno Mars it is.
Oh, Lord. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and end the show next week on our show. Oh, we had this guy on our show Tuesday on Terrified, Rick Wade. Very interesting gentleman. You guys will enjoy talking to him. He started out as a paranormal investigator and developed some abilities. He probably had abilities, he just didn't know it, but his abilities kept getting stronger, and he's a psychic as well now and helps a lot of people. And he's got some really great stories and just a really cool guy. So when he was on Tuesday, we had a chat room full of folks, so he brings a lot of listeners as well. So tune in for that next Sunday on Terrify. This Tuesday, we have paranormal investigator and founder Nicole Strickland will be on the show Tuesday.
Nice.
So that's what we got going on. And everybody have a good night, and we'll see you again next Sunday. Good night, everybody.
Awesome. Have a good night, everybody.